Congressman John Lewis is our guest. I am Paula Gordon, and Bill Russell is with me here at the Commerce Club. This business about action, there is a wonderful story that you tell in your book, Walking with the Wind, about having to come to a moment in Nashville when you are still very young. I don't think you're 21 yet. And you're being challenged on all fronts, and all you will say to these people is, "We're gonna walk." I had the sense that that was the mantra for your life. We're gonna walk. Isn't that what we all must do? Isn't this the action part of being alive, that we all must walk?
Well, near the end of the book, I cite an African proverb which says something like, when you pray, move your feet. I don't necessarily mean that you bow your head and clap your hand. Sometimes we pray, all of us pray in different ways. But if you believe in it, if you believe in something, you should show some sign. And people have said to us, if we march on this day, if we walk on this day, we will be beaten. The local police officer will allow some people to come in and beat us.
Brutally.
And they were right. I kept saying, we cannot let violence stop nonviolence. We will walk. And we did walk on that day and took seats at a lunch counter. And young people came in. They did beat us. They poured hot coffees down on our head, put lighted cigarettes out in our hair and down our back. And we all were arrested and went to jail. But we were able to demonstrate that violence would not stop nonviolence.
I think it is hard for some people to remember because you can't stomach it, and many don't, haven't experienced it, the reign of terror that existed in America before the movement moved us to a better place in this country. Do we have any... How do we keep alive that sense of the progress we have made while not getting angry and buried in the past, but making this part of our future? Say, oh, we learned from that.
Well, this is what I'm hoping that the book would do in part, to say, yes, we've come a distance. We made a lot of progress, and we have. I think there's a greater sense of hope. There's a greater sense of optimism in this region, in the American South, than any other part of the country. Because we had the capacity and the ability, with the leadership of Dr. King and other, to bring the problem out into the open, and we've dealt with it. And as Southerners, black or white, we don't want to go back. We want to continue to move forward.
We've sort of done the work of America here, haven't we?
I think in a real sense, just maybe, we have saved America. You know, America could have been, the American South could have been like Bosnia, Northern Ireland, Lebanon, or some other part of the world. But we are in the process as we move toward the 21st century. I think, I may be too hopeful, I may be too optimistic, but I don't think so. I think we are in the process of laying down the bread on the race. And this part of our country may emerge, just maybe, as a model for the rest of the world.
Well, because racism is a subject in the whole world.
It is a...
It's not just the American South that's dealing with
it. It's not just America. But if we make it work, this diversity, this sense of community, work here in America, maybe, just maybe, we can say to the rest of the world, we've been able to do it. I think we're going to do it. I think we must do it. We don't have any alternative but to do it.
That's right.
Can we talk a little bit about leadership? Is your views of leadership or not textbook views of leadership necessarily, and I'm thinking specifically about the wonderful scene in Washington, the march, where the leaders showed up late for the parade, essentially, or the parade started without them. You weren't late.
This is the Great March on Washington in 1963.
And all the pictures show the leaders, but what had happened is the photographers cleared enough space that we could see the leaders leading. But what happened then, apparently, is that the crowd opened up and in some ways transported you to the front, which to me is just a wonderful metaphor of what I think your view of leadership is.
Well, my view of a leadership, I think true leadership must emerge. It's not necessarily appointed. It is not necessarily elected. It sort of emerged out of a situation. out of effort, out of a movement. We had been up on Capitol Hill on that day, August 28, 1963, visiting with members of the Congress, congressional leadership, and we came down from the hill, the group of 10 of us. The march was already gone. People were already walking by the hundreds, by the thousands. And it was like, there go my people. Let me catch up with them. So it was the photographers who sort of got in there, and they created this openness, really, sort of had people to wait, let them get in here. These are the leaders. And so we just got in there and caught hand. And so all around America, you saw these unbelievable photographs. And I had one in my office today and make it appear that we were leading them. We were really following.
And doesn't that speak to how the great movements happen?
I think great movements really, the people get out there. They get out front.
Plain people.
Plain, ordinary people just get out front. And that's what we had. Just, this is what the book is all about. Simple, ordinary people doing extraordinary things with their lives. Not with a lot of resources. Just using what they had.
I'm a great believer. This is going to sound really old-fashioned, so forgive me. I really am a great believer in homework. You'd done your homework. The leaders, the nominal leaders, and the real leaders, there's a sense of discipline. The work that you had done before as students in Nashville, before you made that first sit-in, before you did the first stand-in, before you did the first Freedom Ride, you had done the work. You didn't just wake up one day and say, oh, let's go have a sit-in. Isn't that homework really important, that grounding?
We were more than lucky. We were really blessed. We had a wonderful young teacher, a young minister by the name of Jim Lawson, who had traveled to India, studied Gandhi, and he came back, and every Tuesday night, a young group of students would go down and study the philosophy of nonviolence. Every Tuesday night, like it was a requirement, like it was an obligation. And there were students at all of the colleges and universities in Nashville. And we studied for almost the entire school year before we had to first test it in. It was so important. We did role playing. We had drama. Blacks playing the role of whites and whites playing the role of blacks. And then we would have a biracial group playing different roles to prepare us for the first sit-in. And we became grounded. Dr. King used to come to Nashville from time to time during those days, and he would say the students in Nashville have the best understanding of the philosophy of nonviolence than anyone he knew. And it was because of this young minister, this young man named Jim Lawson. It is important to do your homework. It is important to be prepared, to be disciplined.
The very fact that you were role-playing and putting yourself in the shoes of the people who would become your abusers, did that help? Did that give you a different sense of what you were doing, that you too had to play the role of the fear and anger that others were going to be projecting toward you?
I think this did so much to put us in the shoes of the opposition. For someone to come up to you and say, you cannot be here, you cannot sit here, you cannot go in here. And then for you to turn around and be placed in a position of saying to someone, because maybe they're short, or maybe their hair's a different color, or maybe because they're not attending the right school. And so you could discriminate against people for different reasons. And we came to the conclusion, really, these categories are silly, and that we shouldn't discriminate against anyone. And trying to convince ourselves that the opposition is human, that they have feelings, they have attitudes, and we're here to change feelings and attitudes and behavior.
Don't we still have something to learn about that? If we were walking in the shoes of a young so-called welfare mother, wouldn't we see the world differently than just standing afar and casting aspersions? If we were to, the old phrase, walk in the other guy's shoes today with today's challenges, isn't there still something to be learned from that sharing of experience?
I think there's a great deal to be learned from the sharing of experiences. I think that what was so beautiful about individuals like Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy. No, Bobby Kennedy had the capacity, the ability to take off his tie, pull off his coat, and loosen up. And he would go down to the Delta, Mississippi, and spend time with a poor black family with little children. He would go to Appalachian, spend time with poor whites, or go to the Southwest, to the barrios, and spend time with Mexican American, or go to a reservation. And I think he grew and he learned, and I think we all can grow and learn by putting ourselves in the places of others. In a sense, forgetting about our own circumstances and getting involved in the circumstances of others.
We're going to be back in just a moment with Congressman John Lewis. I am Paula Gordon. Bill Russell and I are delighted to be here with Congressman Lewis at the Commerce Club. We will be back. Please do stay with us.